Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Nun Gimel. And we're holding on daf Nun Beis Amud Beis. And we got up to Rabbi Loi Kotz Kafniyata Bishvias, which is about one third of the way up from the bottom. So Rabbi Loi, he cut down a tree. Now the question is, how can you cut down a fruit tree b'chol? It's not really such a problem, because remember that if a fruit tree is no longer very productive and the wood is worth more than the fruit and so on, you'd be allowed to do that. So that's not the issue. The issue is, how did he chop down a palm tree that still had these Shemitah kafnayot? Now, kafnayot are dates that are not ripe yet. So they're like they look like berries, but they're developing dates. But how would you be allowed to do that? Because, of course, he didn't do it in a time that there would be a baltashchis, but there's another problem over here, because since it had fruit on it, and it was during Shemitah, the Torah says you're not allowed to destroy Shemitah fruit. That's a different thing, because the Torah said that it should be lachem lo'ochla, v'lo lehefset. You're not meant to destroy it. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. Wow, what a pleasure. We got an Ari, an actual live Ari. Yeah, I was really getting tired of Calvin over there all the time, flying down the same wild mountainsides and so on. Much more fun to have an art. So the question over here is, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, because since these are just small, undeveloped dates, they don't count as fruit. When the Torah said not to destroy fruit, it means fruit. So it's got to already be developed into a fruit. It hasn't yet matured. So then the Torah doesn't answer you, because after all, you're not going to eat it. You can't say la'ochla, so then there's no issur la'ochla v'la'afsit. That would be the simple answer, right? That's what everybody would say. But it's not true, because Reb Nachman quotes Rabbi Baravua saying that if you have matchale de'orla asire, now the matchale are these husks that cover over dates at a young stage. So when the dates, I'm sure you've all seen this, like a plastic covering. A date looks like it's got a plastic covering to it. And as the date develops, the husk falls off. And now it's a much more sensitive skin that's over it. The original skin is like a plastic. So those fall off. And yet it says over here that the actual husks are considered to be osur as orla during the first 3 years. And they are considered to be osur. Why? Because they're shomer lepri. And remember, there's a din of a shomer that it keeps the fruit safe. So the plastic cover keeps the fruit safe. But it's called a fruit. And if it isn't called a fruit yet, so then it wouldn't be osur because of a shomer of a fruit. Now, at what stage in the development of a date is it considered to be a shomer of the fruit? When the dates are kufre, which is what it was that he cut down, and they're still immature. So we're calling that shomer lepri. So obviously, this kufre is considered to be a pri. So now we're back where we started from. What's Rabbi Loi's excuse for cutting down these dates in Shemitah? Says the Gemara, listen, Rav Nachman, who said that the husks are considered to be shomer lepri, he was going according to the shita of Rav Yossi. Tznan, because we have in Orla, the Mishnah says that Rav Yossi, Omer, simadar asur mipnei shehu peri. Now, simadar is equivalent in a grape to the idea of kufri in a date. So if we find over here that it's Rabbi Yossi Shita, Rabbi Yossi says even Simadar, which is very small, it's like the bud, and it says that it's Osir, according to him, because it's considered to be a fruit, even at that very early stage. So, gosh, there you go. But the Rabbanan, they argue, and Rabbi Loi was going like the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan would say it's not considered to be a fruit yet. It's still immature. So by token of the din of the Rabbanan who's saying the Simadar will not be usher because of Orla, so then by the same token, it won't be usher because of Shemitah. And if Simadar for a grape isn't usher, then the Kufri of the date isn't usher, because it's the same thing for a date as it is for a grape. Matki v'lo Reb Shimi Minarda, no, no, no. Because it is not true that the same stage of development is true by all other trees. Because the Rabbanan do argue over here, yes, when it comes to grape, but that doesn't mean that they argue when it comes to dates. So, is it true, in fact, that the Rabbanan hold that the same immature size by another fruit would not be considered to be a fruit also? So how do you explain the fact that in Shviyas it says, remember that these issues are nogea two fundamental places, right? Really more, but the most powerful places would be nogea Shemitah and be nogea the Isser of Orla. So mi'ematai, there it says in the Mishnah in Shviyas, mi'ematai ein kotzitzina te'ilanot b'shviyit. At what point are you not allowed to cut down trees that have fruit on them? During Shemitah, again, assuming that there's no Isser, of course, of Bal Tashchis, and that it's not producing much fruit, and it's more valuable for its wood than it is for its fruit. So Beit Shammai says, Kol ha'ilanot mishiotziu. As soon as the tree starts to bud, at that point, it's already considered to be fruit, and you're not allowed to cut it down. Ubeit Hillel omrim, it depends. If you've got carob, so charuvim, the charuvim are considered to be fruit only at the time that the buds look like little chains. So that's basically, as you know, when you open up a carob that's already mature, you've got these chains of seeds. In the beginning, you have these little dots that are coming along the branch before they mature into the pod. So that would be the shear when it's considered to be a fruit. Gifanim, when it comes to the deal of grape, mishi yigareu. So over there, when they're the size of girua, and we're going to see what that is in a minute, and zeitim, olive trees, the moment that they mishi anetsu, when they have the nates is also similar to the husk around the date, and all other trees, shar kola ilanot, mishi yotziu, from the first point that they start budding into little fruits. That's Beit Shammai Shita. Now, Rav Asi says, let me explain to you that the shear of Girua is the same as the shear of Boser. So we find grapes called Boser, which is Pol Halava, and that is white beans. What? White? What are you talking about? We're talking about grapes. How did a grape turn into a white bean? What are you? You can't mean that. Pol Halava, of course not. The point is that Boser equals Girua, which in size is the same size as a white bean, okay? So that's all that he was saying. So we're saying that Boser and Girua are quite large. So then that means, now that Rav Asi is explaining it this way, that the din of the grape is much larger than the shear that's mentioned in Rav Yossi. Now, think for a minute. Who is the man d'Omar that says that when it comes back in the mission we had from Shviyas, who is the man d'Omar that says Boser, but not Simadar? That's the Rabbanan who argued on Rabbi Yossi, correct? That's what you wanted to say is the answer to Rabbi Eloi, okay? So that whole Mishnah is going like the Rabbanan. And it says Beferish in that Mishnah, Vishar Kola Ilanot Mishiotziu, that any other type of fruit is Oser as soon as they start budding. So then that means they weren't arguing on Rabbi Yossi when it came to dates. So then what was Rabbi Eloi's heter? He can't be going according to the Rabbanan, because the Rabbanan only argued on Rabbi Yossi when they were talking about grapes and a couple of the other things that we talked about over there, you know, like the boxer and so on. But certainly all normal trees, Sharkalilanot, would be even from that early stage that Rabbi Eloi cut it down. So what was his heter? You're right. Rabbi Eloi cut down a male tree, the Nischani cuts. The male palm does not ever mature fruit. So the fruits that grow on it, those are only matured by putting them into like a container that's made out of a female palm branch and so on. And that stimulates them hormonally to mature. They will not mature on the tree, in which case he didn't really do anything, because the only way to turn those fruit into edible fruit anyway would have been to take them off of the tree. So when he cut down that tree, he wasn't doing any kind of damage to Peros Shvias, and therefore there was no issue. Now, getting back to the question of Biur. So remember that we had a machlokas exactly what Biur is. And essentially, halakha l'maisa, the Biur consists of taking the fruit out of your rishos and being mafkir it for aniyim, and according to Rashi, make sure that chayos and behemoths would be able to get it if you're in a place where chayos and behemoths go, but it's basically available to all. Ari, I guess you're supposed to be taking the place of Naftali as well. So he figures, look, if Ari took off the Calvin, so I'll just put up a Naftali. Great. Just great. You wait for weeks and weeks while everybody's at the Cape. Okay, they have their excuses, and then they come back by putting their name up. Very nice. Are we sure about that? You know, it's very easy to put up your name. Oh, look at that. We've got a plucked and shaven Naftali. No wonder he doesn't want to show his face. All right, you put the name back up. All righty. Good to see you. Very good to see you. So, the question is, so as I said, halacha l'maisa, you're mafkir it. Once you're mafkir it, you can go back and take it. Now, look, it's a little bit of a problem, because how in the world is a local individual supposed to know at what point it's really kala min hachaya, min hasada, for the chaya, right? I mean, this is obviously going to vary all the time. Every year it's going to be slightly different. It's a function of the weather. It's a function of how easily accessible it was to other chayos. It's a function of whether people got there first and have to strip the trees and whatever. I mean, there's a lot of issues. How am I supposed to know? Remember, it's not a local condition. It's anywhere in Yehuda, if I'm in Yehuda, anywhere in the Galil, and so on. So how in the world am I supposed to know? So what happens over here is that the Rabbanan, and we find this in a number of different places, gave zmanim for the biur, which is very problematic because it doesn't even make any sense. Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, what it would mean to give a specific time for biur, particularly when those times are linked to the Hebrew date and not to the solar date, and therefore are really not very definitive in terms of the kind of issues that are going to make the fruit available to the chaya. So, ochlim ba'anavim ad sheyichlu daliot shel och. So, if you're talking about places, that's fine. Usually, the places that have the last vines that are still functioning and where there's still a couple of grapes left, that's, Rashi says it might be avel, might be the girsa, and that would be the Avel Kramim that we find elsewhere. So that's a place where there's tons of vines, okay? Look, if you know that they're Mu'charot Mehem, then of course you'd be allowed to continue to eat based on the Mu'charot Shebehem. But that's where you look. Ochlim b'zeitim achi chaleacharon shebitkoa. The most olives you can find, you can leave them in your house until the last grove of olives is finished in Tekoa, because Tekoa is like alpha, remember, it's AA when it comes to the growth of olives. Rebbe Eliezer Amer, it depends what we're talking about. I mean, it depends if you're in Gush Halav, if you're in the Usher area, and Gush Halav obviously also is tremendous for olives. And this would mean, Kadeshe, and when we say it's gone, it doesn't mean literally, completely, and totally, you won't find one or two. It means Kadeshe, Yehe, Ani, Yotse, Veinomotse, Lo Benofo, Velo Beikaro, Rova. It would mean that an Ani would go out with a bag, he would collect all day long, and he wouldn't even find a Rova, even if he looks in the branches, he looks at the bottom of the grapes the olives that fell down to the ground. Ochlin begrogrot, achichlu pagi beitine. There's another place for when it comes to figs, and that's beitine. So you don't have any figs in beitine. And Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't use those figs because beitine are pagim. Remember, pagim are premature means that they're essentially stunted figs that never mature. So lohu's kurupagi beitini, the only time that we use that as a marker is not for this. That was only legabe meiser. For over there, it says pagi beitini. That's the only place that we find a mention of pagi beitini. That pagi beitini. And ahini mean the same idea of pagim, but in dates that don't mature, that grow in toviana, they are chayev in maaser. That was what it's nogea, but you can't use that for biur because biur is talking about real, complete, mature fruit. Okay. Ochlim b'tmarim achiyich le'acharon shebitzoah. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel ochin we had before, remember the braita. The Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says it depends where the fruit are. If the fruit have fallen between the branches, yes. But you can't continue to keep things in your house based on fruit that are only available and having got stuck on the sheetsim, which are the thorny-like projections on the bottom of the palm, because that isn't really accessible for an animal to eat. Okay, v'raminu. Now, we seem to have a problem in this braita, because there's another braita that says very much not like that. Ochlim ba'anavim ad ha-pesach. This is what I mentioned to you before, that it's strange to find a time, particularly when the time is in the lunar year. So you're allowed to eat grapes that you keep in your home, in other words, that's what it means, allowed to eat, until Pesach. You're allowed to keep your olives in the house and eat them until Shavuos. You're allowed to eat figs, dried figs, grogrot, up until Chanukah. You're allowed to eat dates up until Purim. Rav Bibi said that the last two you got confused, because I know Rav Yochanan flipped the last two and he switched it. So he meant, he said it would be grogrot until Purim and tomorrow mat Chanukah. Fine, but I don't care. But the bottom line is, I mean, it says that it goes according to the time of the year. And the other bride says it goes according to the place and so on. Okay, but that's basically the same time is one approach. Or I could say, look, the first braita was not really 100% precise, and it said so. It said, and if you find anything later than that, fine. So eat what's later. Didn't it say that? So it already opened up the door to you by telling you, I don't mean this as a strictly applicable shir, that it's dafka in this town or that town. I'm saying in general. So I'm doing the same thing. I'm just talking about in general. So that's what it's saying over here. It said before, in yesh mucharot ochlim aleihem. So then that same idea. We're giving a general marker. Now, the obvious question is, what good is a general marker? Because, I mean, especially, see, you could say that a general marker would be an early shear. And over here, we're just looking for the later shear, yesh mucharot behem. But the thing is that would only be if you paskin that the idea of biur is to actually destroy the fruit. But if you paskin, as we do, la halacha, that biur simply means being mafkir. So then imagine the current situation. The guy is mafkir his fruit based on an early zman, right? And then he goes and he takes it back into his house because he has a right to be zoche in it again. But it turns out that the very vague shear that was given to him was not really accurate. And in fact, the fruit actually fell off of the tree 3 hours later. Now he's in trouble. Because now he's holding fruit after the Zman HaBiur, and now it's not going to help him to go and be mafkir it later again, because it's already usher, because he held it after the Zman of the Biur, right? So what good is a vague shear if you're looking for something that has to be really accurate? So the Chazon Ish says that, look, this, remember, this is a actual theme in the Chazon Ish in many, many issues, that he points out that the shiurim of the Torah are always very loose. And we pretend that we're going with shiurim that are extremely generalized. So if you're talking about the square root of 2 and it suddenly becomes a simple fraction, or you're talking about pi and it suddenly becomes a whole number, or you're talking about the molad, which is ridiculous, since every real molad is extremely complex and different from the actual, what we call the molad, which is an average molad, or you're talking about the Tkufas Hashana, the Tkufas Shmuel, or even the Tkufas Rav Ada, or you're talking about the bracha that you make on the supposed coming together, the Birchas Hachama, which is a fiction. I mean, these are all ridiculous, says the Chazon Ish. So why are we playing games and pretending? Because he says, we're not pretending. That's exactly the point. The Torah is not given to artificial intelligence. It's given to these meat brains that really do not have very useful instruments in their light detectors or their sound detectors or anything else. They don't really know much about reality. So the Torah obviously is meant for an animal level intelligence that knows very little about reality. So how the heck are you supposed to tell them, well, at this precise wavelength, at oscillations, you're going to have to get rid of your fruit? I mean, that's ridiculous. There's this vague notion that when the fruit is approximately gone, okay, so the most that you could be medayik in that is a day. So there's never going to be a problem of taking out your things, being mafker them, taking them back in, and then the next day you take them out again, you're mafker until you know for sure that the zman is over. That's the Chazon Ish's approach. Others simply say, look, it's very easy, and I think Shlomo Zalman said, it's very easy to bring things back into your home, but not amanat to be zoche in them. So in other words, you're mafker it. Let's say you say it in front of three people, listen, I'm mafker this stuff. Anybody who wants it is can take it. And if I take any of it back, I'm telling you right now, I don't have in kavana to be zoken it personally. Anybody who wants to have it, please just knock on the door and I'll give it to you. It's hefker and it remains hefker. Okay, so then you continue using it as if it's hefker and you're only mechavik to be zoche in it in such time where it's already vadai, not a chance that there's anything left. That's the practical etza. All right. And you can see how this leads to real problems, because if you didn't have an Otzer Bezdin that was taking care of Shemitah and was making certain that the Biur was taken care of, then you're going to have problems with any kind of heterim on Shvias, unless you hold that heter affected the need for Biur. Tanya. Okay, so once we're talking about over here trees, we're just going to tell you about another issue that has to do with trees. On the surface, the relationship of this sugya to what we were talking about before is the relationship to the topographical distinctions that we made between the different aratzot, right? So we had the three major aratzot, which were the Yehuda, the Galil, and Eiver HaYarden. And then we have the different areas within those places. Now, that is topographical differences. So you would have the mountainous areas, you would have the plain areas, and you would have the valley areas. So now, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is giving you simonim by which you can understand what is considered to be. If you take a look, it's interesting, because until now we were taking only a look at the animal territories that were going to be koveya. And he gives you simonim that are arboreal simonim, and you can define an area on the basis of its tree. So therefore, Shimon Gamaliel says, look, the way to know that you are on a mountain, and like, is this a hill or is this like a mountain? Milim. If gallnut trees are growing there, that has a din of a har. If you're in an emek, the emek should be filled with palm, date palm. So then you're in a real emek. If you're in a nachal, how would you know what a nachal is? Maybe that's nogea nachal for the idea of the egla arufa. So that would require a nachal. There would have to be bamboo or reeds that are growing there. And the plains, the simon is sycamore tree. And the alpha pishain raya ladavra, I can't prove that last thing, but there is a remez to it in the Torah, because it says, vayitin amelech atakesev b'Yerushalayim ka'avanim ve'et arazim. The cedar trees were like so cheap in those days that it was like kishikmim asher bashvela, like the sycamore trees that are on the plain. So you see that sycamore is on the plain. I mean, that doesn't prove that without sycamore, it's not, doesn't have a din of a plain, but okay, but it's a remez. All right. Now, let's explain what the point is. A similar makim dekolim, that would be nogea what? That would be nogea bikurim. Because the tnan, it says in a Mishnah, and this is a very important thing, because people do not realize that even though a fruit is from the Shivas Haminim, it may not be chayev and bikurim. And why would that be? Because the bikurim has to be from the absolute quality fruit. And if you're growing something that is not in a quality area, it's not going to be chayev and bikurim at all. We'll see how we know that in a moment. It's not, but it does say in the Mishnah bikurim, ein mevi'im bikurim ela mishivat haminim. That's number one. And you cannot bring it from dekolim shebaharim because those are not quality things. And because of that, it's not chayev bichlal. So the shivas haminim are the shevach of Eretz Yisrael, and the kolim shabarim are not shevach. You can't bring it from grain, it says over here perot, but it means tvua, that are in the amakim, because as Rashi says, in the amakim, you sometimes have a lot of rot because the water pools there in the amakim. It's very damp, not good for growing grain that is going to be healthy. Similar, nechalim kanim, maybe that's nogea nachal eitan. What is considered to be a nachal for the egla rufa? Similar, shvela shikma, what would that be nogea? That could be nogea in mekach umemka. As if somebody makes a deal on the sale of a property in the shvela, then if there's no sycamore in it, the guy can say that that's not what he was buying. By the way, I mean, once you're telling me it's nogea mekach umemka, all of them could be nogea mekach umemka. You don't have to come to say it's nogea any of the other halachas as well. And now we are ready for our favorite kapitan. Thank you. Continuing on with the theme of the perek, which is mokom shenagu, different levels of minag, where it's b'chayev you and where it's not b'chayev you. So mokom shenagu limkor b'imata kalanochrim. There are places where there's a minhag to sell small livestock to goyim, you're allowed to. Where the minhag is not to, you're not allowed to. U'b'chol mokom ein mochrim lem b'magasa. You're not allowed to sell them large behemoths. Remember that we came out with the explanation that this is because of the question of their renting, or their trying out, or their borrowing. And the problem is that then if they only borrowed and the animal was worked on Shabbos, then it would mean that you were being over on allowing your animal to work on Shabbos. And the Torah says, it's shorcha v'chamorcha, it all has to rest. The other problem might be that if they come to a dealer to buy an animal right before Shabbos, they want to try it out, then the owner is sorely tempted to show off his animal's capability, and the animal generally will respond only to the owner. So because of that, he's not going to let the goy take his chamor and say, you know, come this way, and the chamor is going to kick him in the rear. So he's going to want to show him what a well-behaved animal he's got, right? I mean, remember, in those days, I mean, Teslas were a given. You simply told the animal to park, and it backed up and parked, you know? So, I mean, we're still trying to catch up. So anyway, but it only responds to its owner's voice. So because of that, if he tells the animal to move, then he's going to be over on Mechamer Acher Behemto on Shabbos if the animal is carrying something. So it's one of those gezeiros. Why would there be an isser to sell smaller livestock, which is not used for carrying, and therefore won't do malacha? So Rashi learns it's because of a gezeira that you may come to just get used to selling animals, and then you'll forget about the isser derabbanan, which is not to sell behema gasa. Now, some Rishonim bring that the isser is because they use animals for sexual purposes, so you're providing them with sort of a lifnei iver. But the problem is that the Gemara says that when it came to, that was a havamina in the Gemara, that you shouldn't sell them large livestock. But the Gemara says that they will not use their own personal animals for sex because it affects the reproductive system, and they don't want their animals to end up being sterile. So why wouldn't that apply also to their smaller livestock? So most don't hold of the Meir is one of those who brings it in the name of others. But in any event, the Pashtus is like Rashi, that it's just a gezera. Now, it doesn't matter whether these are full-grown animals, either large, small livestock, or whether they are the agalim, which are calves, so they're not fully grown, or siachim, or they're foals. Doesn't matter if they're shlemim, or if they're shavurim. They could be in good shape, or they can be broken. They can have a broken foot. We're obviously not going to do any malacha. But once we made the isser, we made the isser. Rav Yehuda says, no, that's not true. If it's broken, you can't say made the isser, because why in the world would someone buy an animal with a broken foot that's not going to be fixable? I'll tell you why, because he's hungry, and he doesn't want the animal for its foot. He wants the animal for its steaks. So because of that, it's never going to be that somebody said, oh, look, there's Joe's animal working on Shabbos. It's not in the same category, because it's not going to be there for Shabbos. The guy's going to eat it. And Ben Betera says you can always sell horses, because horses are used for riding. And riding on Shabbos is itself only an Isser D'Rabbanan, because the Chai no say at that small. So we're not going to start making a gezera not to sell a horse because maybe he'll use the horse for running. I mean, that itself is only an Isser D'Rabbanan. Another minhag, makam shenagru lechot tzli b'leilei psachim. There's places where people eat at the Seder. They eat meat that is roasted. You're allowed to. Makam shenagru lo lechot, you're not allowed to. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. By the way, I just want you to know that nowadays the minhag is to sell animals. Nobody's quite sure why, but it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch that this has become the minhag. And it's fascinating because this is nogeah. Some bring rayas from the Yerushalmi, that if there's a point at which a gezerah became batel because of logistics, it only goes into effect again when a Beis Din reiterates the gezerah, and it does not automatically go back into effect. And since there was a period in which the gezerah was no longer applicable because Jews did not live amongst other Jews and only did business with Goyim, so because of that, sometimes that today, even though the situation has changed, we still no longer have this Isser, which is a fascinating thing because it's very nogea, many gezeras. Anyway, continuing on. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asur Lo Ladam Shiomar Basar Zela Pesachu. A person is not allowed to take a piece of meat, according to Rashi, even if it's just a piece of meat from a butcher shop, and say this meat is for Pesach, because it looks like he's being magdish behemtai. Looks like he's being magdashit for a korban, and if he eats it, he's being erchal kochim bachutz. Now, this is very weird. I mean, how in the world is a piece of meat able, somebody to be able to say that he wants it? So maybe it means that he wants the value of the meat to be for korban Pesach, which means that he intends to be magdash kochim bachutz, and so on. Anyway, Tosfos learns that's crazy. We're talking about over here an actual animal is what we're talking about, and it means that the chashash would be that he's actually being magdash. And then when he would eat it, so then he would be sheichet bachutz, would be erchol bachutz, whatever the situation is. Rav Papa says, but this is only nogea meat. If somebody says that about chitim, it obviously means for his matzah. It doesn't mean for using its money for kachim. So if he says chitim, it's mintu apischa ka'amar. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, you're not allowed to say meat is for Pesach? Meisvei omer Rav Yossi tudas ish romi in higes b'nei romi lechol gedayim mikulasim b'leilei psachim. So this famous guy Tudas, we're going to see more about him later, he made a minhag in Rome that people should eat for Pesach actual agedi that was roasted the way you would roast the korban in the Beis HaMikdash, which is that the kra'av were outside hanging on it, and so were the insides of it. So the feet and the organs were on it from the outside. It looked exactly like a korban Pesach, and he had them do that zecher Pesach. And the rabbanim sent him, if you were anybody else, man, el mole to the satar, we would have put you into nidui, because you're being machil yisrael kachim bachut. What do you mean kachim bachut? They didn't make it kodesh, but it looks like it. Ela ema, in other words, it looks like korav lahachil yisrael kachim bachut. So you see that the only problem that we had with it was the fact that it was a gedim mikulas, that it was rosho akra'av, and so on, right? But if it wouldn't have been mikulas, we wouldn't have said that. So why does Rav say any kind of meat? That's crazy. No, Don't you understand? Mikulas is if you eat it, not if you say it. Just having that kind of thing on your Seder is terribly suspicious. So over there, Loshna Amar, Loshna Lo Amar, I don't care if you mention something, this is for Pesach or not. But what Rav was talking about was regular meat over there, only if you said, this is for Pesach. But if you didn't say anything, then obviously it's not going to be us. This has nothing to do with Tudus. Rav Acha, Masi Lo, Masi Zik, Rabbi Shimon. So now Rav Acha said that the Braisa that talked about Tudus is going Aliba to Rabbi Shimon, and he was the one that said it, not Rabbi Yossi. Maskev la Rav Sheshes. Wait a second. The way we had it before, that it was going like Rabbi Yossi, everything made sense. Because then you could say that it looks like Tudus was korev to eat, causing them to eat kachim out of Yerushalayim. But according to Mandi Arma, that is Rabbi Shimon, which Rav Acha is claiming, it's not true. Because we know that it says in the Mishnah in Menachos, where over there it's talking about a guy who wants to bring a korban mincha, but he says, I want to bring a korban mincha. He's mechayev himself with a neder to bring a korban mincha that's made out of barley. Now, there is no such mincha that can be brought as a nedava. What are the korbanos of mincha that can be brought from barley? Only the omer and a minchas kanos for an isha saita, correct? There is no other barley. So you can't make such a neder. So according to Rabbi Shimon, he says over there that he doesn't have to bring anything. Why? Because if you do things that are not normal, so the whole statement is completely canceled. And we do not say, so if something would not work, so how can he say it's korov? I mean, people in Rome were not able to bring their animals as carbonas, obviously. So even if he would have said it's Kaddish, it wouldn't have meant a darn thing, according to Rabbi Shimon. So why would Rabbi Shimon make the whole big fuss about, oh my gosh, Shikarov? It wouldn't have made any difference. Rabbi Shimon Poter, so is not it. Armale Ravino Ravashi, and it works out according to Rabbi Yossi. It doesn't work out according to Rabbi Yossi either. Because Minecha, didn't Rava say that Rabbi Shimon, his whole din that he said over there, that you don't have to worry about the mincha, was dafka going aliba the Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yossi, in what way? Because Rabbi Yossi says that af bigmar dvarav adam nitfas. So Rabbi Yossi says, this is a case that we had a couple of times from the Mishnah in Tmura. When a guy says something should be Tmuras Eila, Tmura Shlomi. So what's the din? I mean, it's a contradiction. Is it Tmura Seila, Tmura Shlomi? So one shita is that we go according to Tchilas Dvar of Rabbi Meir, that it's a Tmura Seila, and then he was trying to change his mind to make it a Tmura Shlomi, and it doesn't count. Rabbi Yossi says over there, the entire statement is important. And it is, in fact, both a Tmura Seila and a Tmura Shlomi. What does that mean? It means 50-50. Wait till it gets a mum, sell it, and use half the money for an Eila, half of the money for Shlomi. Fine. So if that's the case, then Rabbi Shimon, who says that, well, we don't say that the guy said, I want to bring a mincha, let's stop at that. Then when he says, I want to bring a mincha out of barley, we'll say, that's stupid. Forget the barley part. Stick with the first part. So he's got to be going according to Rabbi Yossi, who says, no. Every last part of a statement needs to be taken into consideration, which means that we need to keep the barley in mind. And therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, since barley is not doable, so the whole thing is canceled. But if Rabbi Shimon, I mean, I'm assuming that if Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Yossi, then Rabbi Yossi would also hold like Rabbi Shimon and would say that a person needs to do it kiderech hamitnadvim. So we've had the same problem. If you say it's Rabbi Yossi, you say it's Rabbi Shimon. Says Rav Ashi, no, that's not true. If it's going like Rabbi Yossi, it's fine. Rabbi Shimon might hold Rabbi Yossi that you need to take into consideration at the end of the statement. That does not in any way imply that Rabbi Yossi has thought like Rabbi Shimon, that a person, if he says something, that we should say that an Adam Motzi Dvar of Levatala, who's to say it's Levatala? If a person, the guy would say, listen, okay, I made a mistake. That doesn't mean I didn't want to bring a carbon. So therefore, we're Mechayev and a carbon, not like Rabbi Shimon. That's very possible. Now, when we say, and if it wouldn't be that you were Tudus, we would have really socked it to you, baby. Is that because he was a great man or because he was dangerous? And he was had a lot of political influence. We don't dare do that to you. But so what is it? He was a gavaraba or was he a bal egrofin? Was he violent? Tashma. We see in a brayse that he was a Talmud Chacham because it says, Odzo darash Tudus ish Romi. That Tudus from Rome said a beautiful drasha from this week's parsha. Ma ra'u Hananya Mishael v'Azaria shemasru atzmam kedushat Hashem lekivshana esh. Why did Hananya Mishael v'Azaria give themselves over to be burnt alive in this kivshana esh rather than to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue? Why did they not darshan v'chai behem? Now, the obvious question is, Tosef says, what do you mean? There is no v'chai behem when it comes to Avodah Zarah. So what are you talking about? They were mechuyev to bow down. So there's a number of various possibilities. The Rabbeinu Tam says that Nebuchadnezzar's statue was not Avodah Zarah. It was basically hero worship, not Avodah Zarah. He didn't claim to be a god. It was just like this great and glorious Nebuchadnezzar and his Bavel. The man was a megalomaniac. And so everybody had to bow down to him. That was the point. They're bowing down to a statue of him. But because they wanted to be machmer on themselves, that it's a violation of Kvet Shemayim to give that level of covet, it looks like Avodah Zarah. So because of that, they were Moser Nefesh. How do you have a right to give your life away? It's not your life. So where did they bring a raya from? That's one approach. Another approach is they knew that this was coming. They could have gotten out of town because that's what Daniel did. Because the Gemara says over there, so where was Daniel? Daniel found some excuse and went overseas for some special government requirement. They could have done the same thing, but they bedafka put themselves into that position. Why did they do that? They learned it from the froggies in this week's Parsha because they said, look, it's a Kal Vachomer. Tzvardeim do not have a chiyuv of Kiddush Hashem, right? And it says, Ve'alu uva'u beveitecho v'tanurecho v'misharotecho. So these froggies are going to come into your home and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. Now, when do you have a kneading bowl that is by a tanur that we should put it together? Only if the tanur is already hot. And it says that they jumped into the hot tanur. Not that they went into a cold tanur. So you see that they decided that the best way to really suck it to Paro is by jumping alive into a hot oven. Ew, what a mess. Okay, so we, Hananya Mishael v'Azaria, who are human, and we have a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, so for sure we should do that. Anushu b'tzuvah Kiddush Hashem, alach es kama v'kama. So obviously, Tudus was a Adam Gadol, not a violent man. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Avin Omar, you know what Tudus used to do? Tudus used to make a deal with Talmidei Chachamim. He would give them all types of merchandise, and he would say, listen, you guys go out and sell this when you get a chance. You keep 80% of the profit. Give me 20%. Made them feel good, like they were doing him a favor, and this way he gave everybody a parnasa, and it says, Domer Rabbi Yochanan kol amatu malai lekis Talmidei Chachamim zoche v'yoshev b'yeshiva shel mala. That anybody who does such a thing and provides Talmidei Chacham with a parnasa in this way, he actually is zoche l'olam haba to the same thing that Talmidei Chachamim were zoche to. Shenema ki betzel hachochma, betzel hakesev. The same beautiful shade that you have in the sense of what your wisdom has given you, your money can buy you. Amazing.